Well, I actually wanted to start by asking a question. We have 9 people here, so that's enough to have a little discussion. My question is, what your sense is of working with the TSK book. Now, I know most of you are probably familiar with it, but in the past couple of years of this program, we've focused more on dynamics and love of knowledge. And as I think I said at the outset, in a way, I feel very much at home in those books. And when I return to the first TSK book, I always really enjoy it and benefit from it. But it's like meeting a stranger that I haven't met in a while and kind of getting to know them again and realizing they used to be one of my best friends, It's not because I wasn't the editor on this book, I don't I have to kind of work with it a little differently. So I'm very aware of that difference, and I'm just wondering how you all are reacting, to working with this book. As I've said before, some people think this is absolutely the book. Everything else is just commentary. Other people find it difficult. I'm just curious how it's going for people. Does anybody like to say anything about that? I think the answer is no.
Incredibly rich,
Yeah.
and
Okay.
it reminds me that it's probably less accessible for many, unless you've kind of had an interest in philosophy, or it could seem too difficult, whereas some of the ones about the self are more accessible because we all realize we have a self somehow. But I'm really glad we've returned to this book. It's the one I started with 20 years ago, and it's amazing to find that I still don't understand it.
No, you understand it better, right? Isn't that what you meant to say?
There's so much to learn from it still.
No, that's very true. And there's a quality of it being very systematic that I always appreciate. It's like, well, we're doing this, and a little while later we'll do that, and I'm saying this right now, but you don't really have the background to understand it, but it has that kind of sense of being a very structured presentation, and it really invites you and asks you to follow along with it, and very seriously engage it. And certainly in that sense, of course, we're starting in the middle of the book. We're starting with the time section, not the space section. But at least we are following a plan where we're going to work our way again systematically through the whole time section, and that seems to me appropriate for the way that TSK is set up. Anybody else have any comments about it?
It feels less linear, and the paragraphs and the sentences seem to have a depth. I feel like I'm pulled into it deeper. The other books tend to run at a more linear kind of, I feel like I'm following a surface on the other books that has a linear movement. This one, I feel like I get drawn right into a deeper place. Without moving in a linear kind of way.
That's very interesting. That's worth thinking about. And one of the things that Rinpoche has said in with respect to working on his material, editing his material in general, is he says you always need to be writing on at least 3 levels at once. And as an editor, that's not so easy. But it's something that I try to work with. And maybe what you're saying is that that works well in the that there's something really in the first TSK book where those levels are really all functioning in a very strong and positive way. That makes sense to me. Okay, well let's get started with our reading for today. So this is the second chapter in the time section. And I want to start by pointing just to a small point that he makes on the first page, page 135 this is. He says that in order to attain what he calls control and balance here, we have to make a shift to more appropriate ways of knowing. That's the phrase that he uses on the fifth line. And I think what he means here, I think it's really important to understand, you know, because first we have to understand what it might mean to make that shift to a more appropriate way of knowing, and then we have to see if we can do it. And that's part of the kind of systematic structure here. Let's get clear on the first and then move on to the second. And I think basically in this context, a more appropriate way of knowing means a way of knowing that does not leave out the dynamic of time. And the central point, it seems to me, that is being made about our ordinary understanding, let's say, our ordinary understanding of time, is that it's based on a static view of the world. It's in particular, it's based on a knowing that is about things, and that takes a view on things. You know, so this idea of things and view is really important, and it relates to a little bit anyway, relates to science. And one of the things in this book is that Rinpoche will from time to time make comparisons with science. And one characteristic of the scientific view, the modern scientific view, is that it's not so focused on things, you could say. It tends to, as Rinpoche has said in other places here in this book, it tends to focus on law-like regularities. I don't want to try to characterize it right now, but let's say patterns and flows of energy and not so much things. And he has said that he says in this chapter and elsewhere that that's a good thing, that science in making that move is more attuned to the temporal dynamic, even though it doesn't necessarily see it that way or put it that way. But I want to focus a little more for a moment on this idea of views. He says, and I think, let's see, we're still on page 135. He says in the second paragraph, right? He says, okay, you can have an ordinary experience and you can have a non-standard experience, but either way, you're still relying on a transitional view, right? And he says, the fact that there's a view that changes doesn't mean that it's in force. And he says that, you know, I realize this is difficult to understand, but in the next chapter, you'll understand that. But I just want to talk for a moment more generally about the sense of views, because it goes very much with the sense of there being something that you want to get a view of. You know, you're looking at something and you're taking a particular viewpoint. And one of the things about science, there's a fairly famous formulation that, in the last 15 or 20 years, somebody wrote a book called The View from Nowhere, Thomas Nagel, a philosopher of science and other things. So he called this book The View from Nowhere, and he was saying that that's the scientific aim, that instead of being limited to a particular view, that is to say, instead of looking from a subjective position, because that's what it means to have a particular view. I see the world from my perspective. And so instead of that, science aims at a view from nowhere, a view that would be true no matter where you were, a view that doesn't take a particular perspective. And that is related to what the TSK vision is doing, but it's also very different. It's different in the sense that TSK is not about a view, it's about a vision. You know, remember that the subtitle of the book is that there's a that it's a new vision of reality. And that's a word that I think has been carefully chosen. It's certainly not a new view of reality that Rinpoche is presenting. And if it were, you'd say, well, that's keeping in place the kind of subjective structure. But when he talks about vision, it's like the view from nowhere. That is to say, it's going beyond a subjective perspective, but it's also a something that engages the dynamic of time, that goes back to that more appropriate kind of knowledge. And so there's an interesting passage on page 142, it's in the second full paragraph, where he's talking about great time. And he says, it is time that inspires and brings to life the essence of the vision here presented. Unless this vision is perceived through the revealing quality of time, the full and encompassing nature of the vision will remain only a shadow. So the appropriate knowledge that we're looking for here is a knowledge that has to do with vision rather than view, and that has to do with the dynamic of time. You know, the dynamic, as he says here, that inspires and brings to life the vision. So the vision as a lived reality, you could kind of say as a lived experience, is something that we have to learn how to engage, and we do that by engaging time. The other thing that he points to, you know, he says we focus on things rather than focusing on the dynamic, and we've talked about that quite a bit. He also says that we focus or we you know we rely on views rather than vision. That's the point I've just been trying to make. And then the other thing that he brings in that's related to that is meanings. So there's kind of a triad. There's things, or you could say substance maybe, but let's say things. There's things, there's views, and there's meanings. And I wanted to look for just a moment on what at what he means or where he says something about meanings. On page 138, go back there, he says, let's see, okay. He says, so here we are in lower time, and this is in the last paragraph on the page. Here we are in lower time, and what we try to accomplish is, you know, it either kind of undermines itself or it's very frustrating. We can't really accomplish what we want to. And we come up against all sorts of obstacles and obscurations and barriers. That's the framework for this. And then in that paragraph, he says, these barriers that we come up against are not merely static features of our experiential landscape. They are not frozen space or walls. Rather, they are meanings and delineations timed out by lower time as part of its diffusion. So that, I think, is a very important point. As, you know, taking a subjective view, we see a world of static things, and that means because we see that, we turn away from time. We have a viewpoint, and that means that we don't engage the dynamic of the vision that Rinpoche is trying to put in place here. And that works itself out in our experience in the fact that we have a world that in which we assign meanings. So it's not as though we can say, as he says, it's not as though we run up against a barrier that's kind of visible as a barrier. It's that the whole reality that we occupy, because we understand it in a certain way, we assign it a certain meaning, that in itself is an obstacle to engaging the dynamic of time. So meanings, you know, this is worth, it would be worth thinking about and saying more about, but it's maybe something you can reflect on yourself, the relationship between a static thing-like approach to reality and the meanings that we use, and you know, in other contexts, and when we've been doing these online programs, sometimes we talk about that in terms of stories. Here the word is meanings, the meanings that we assign. The other aspect of that, that when we talk in terms of meanings, so we've already got three topics here, right? We've got things and view and meanings. And then the fourth thing that I want to bring in is thoughts. And one of the reasons I want to bring it in is because next quarter, in the next program, we're going to be focusing on the theme of thoughts. So I'm always sensitive to that when we're reading about it here. But you can see how meanings that we assign and the thoughts that we have are related to each other. And he makes an important point here in terms of how you can approach the vision and how you know what the significance of thoughts is. You can say that a thought is already something static. I mean, I think it's very thought-provoking in the English language that the word thought is the past tense of the verb think. So thoughts are something that has already been thought. You know, we think and then we have a thought as a result of our thinking, and then that thought becomes a meaning. And now we're in this kind of limited view. But it is also true that thinking, especially when it before it turns into thoughts and while it's still just thinking, it can open up new possibilities. And maybe one way to say that is that thinking in itself is dynamic. Now, it's not the full dynamic of the vision of time and space and knowledge that Rinpoche is introducing, but it can be a kind of a way of connecting with it. And I'm looking here at page 141, in the first full paragraph on page 141. And he's talking about how we, you know, because we have this lower level view of time, we run into all sorts of problems. And then he says in this paragraph, he says, problems of this sort in our science, living, and thinking can encourage us to use thinking and observing in new ways, to break through the partitions defining things. In this way, thinking can imitate time's penetrating evocation of great space, along with, as is more common, its obscuring rush of meanings. So this is really an important point, I think, in terms of what you could call the methodology of the TSK vision. You know, one of the things that people always have a question about with TSK is, well, it comes up in different ways, but sometimes people say, well, you know, I really love the exercises, but I can't get into the reading, you know, or do I have to understand everything that he's saying? It's too much of a challenge, right? Well, I'm sure you've heard me say this before, but my take on that is that thinking is itself an exercise. And the reason that it's a powerful exercise is the reason that he gives here. Thinking can imitate the dynamic of great time, let's say. It can kind of follow along in the same with the same quality of aliveness, a kind of a liberating aliveness. It is not that aliveness because it's only happening on the level of thought. But we can get a kind of, number one, we can get kind of a flavor of the aliveness through our thinking. And I think that's a quality that people experience sometimes with the TSK vision. When you're reading, you have the sense that you're embarked on this great adventure, you know, through your thinking, through really engaging the ideas, you're evoking the dynamic of time. Thinking itself is alive, it has its own dynamic. So that possibility is there. At the same time, as he says, that's not how we usually use thinking. The way we usually use thinking is to just keep piling up more meanings, the onrushing flow of meanings, I think he said here. So that possibility for thought and for thinking is really fundamental. Okay, that's my, I suppose, the main theme I wanted to engage today. Let me stop there and see if people have any comments or questions. There's a lot more to say, but I want to give people a chance to react to that.
I'd like to say something.
Yes.
The phrase obscuring rush of meaning is particularly nice there because it's obscuring. True in our experience, but it's also rushing out of great space and great time. So it's kind of like a respectful way of referring to its role in our life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a living current kind of.
Yeah, that's interesting. And,
I mean, there's something to harvest there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a very. I actually wanted to call your attention to a place in dynamics of time and space that I think adds another dimension to some of the discussion in our reading for this week, and it's pages 99 to 100 of Dynamics of Time and Space. And on page 100, I'm just going to roughly paraphrase now, he's talking about connecting with the dynamic of time, and he says one way to do that is to find that dynamic in the middle of our ordinary engagements and involvements, in the middle, for instance, of our emotional reactions. And I think that's very much related to what you were just saying, Michael, that there is an obscuring rush of meanings, but that very rush is already a kind of an evocation, or at least a linking back into the dynamic of time. Or at least that's what I understood you to be saying. So I think it's like that. So there's an interplay here. You know, what goes in a direction that keeps us stuck on what he calls here stage one of time, can also, just through a certain kind of reorientation, can shift us back in to the to a more engaged, a deeper level. What he's calling here, let's say, the second stage of time. Any other comments or thoughts about this? Okay, well, let's go on. So there's a very fundamental question that Rinpoche asks in this chapter. What happens is, let me give the kind of structure here. He says something on page 136. That, you know, may have surprised you when you read it, because he's talked, you know, we've been talking a lot about the dynamic of time. But on page 136, where he's saying that if we go beyond the usual model, and even beyond our experiences of, you know, that go beyond our usual, or the ordinary way we engage time, he's saying, and this is at the end of the first, not the first paragraph, the lines right above that. He's saying time is neither linear nor sequential. Okay, we can kind of see that. But he says also time does not pass. And he says there are neither moments nor successive movement. There's no succession. And that, I think, is a challenge and something of a surprise, because it seems as though when you say, okay, we want to engage the dynamic of time, what we would like to do is get the feeling of time passing. And he says it doesn't pass. It's not sequential. It doesn't flow. The dynamic of time does not unfold in that way. And that's a kind of a challenge. And the way that he then says, now, in order to justify that statement, he doesn't put it quite that way, but in order to justify that statement, we're going to look at time in terms of three stages of time. Right? And in our reading for this week, we go through the first stage, and also we sort of get into the second stage. And next week we will continue with the second stage and get into the third stage. So we don't have a complete picture here, but we're definitely understanding something. So since we're almost or running short on time in this phone call, let me just raise one question and then go to a place in the chapter where Rinpoche suggests what we can do, something we can do about this. The thing I wanted to mention is on page 137, and he says, he's characterizing our approach to time, and he says we try to tame time for our own egoistic purposes. That's at the beginning of the first full paragraph. He says, lower time amounts to an attempted taming and appropriation of great time for egoistic purposes. And it's natural to ask, why do we do that? Especially if Rinpoche is right in his description, and I think we generally have a sense of that ourselves, that it's not a very satisfying way to be. The moments when we feel the most fulfilled are the times when we are not so committed to lower time. So why do we make that commitment? And that's a big question, but he does give an answer of sorts, and I think it's one that's really worth reflecting on and seeing it in your own experience. All of these things are things to look at as you go about your daily life and see how they connect to how you experience. So at the end of that first full paragraph, he says, there's this series of misfirings. Things are always going wrong. We're not connected to time's dynamism. And then in the last sentence, he says, this pattern is what we are. So we go along with it. And that's an answer of sorts. You might still ask, well, what does that mean? Or how do we know that that's really what we are? But that's at least the direction to look in, to say that our way of connecting with time in terms of things, in terms of views, in terms of meanings, in terms of thoughts, those different aspects that we've been looking at, that is us. And that's why we hold on to it. That's why we feel maybe not exactly comfortable with it, but at home with it. It's as though somebody were living in a desert where it was incredibly difficult just to get food and water and shelter, and you were always on the very edge of dying. But, you'd say, well, but that's my home, And if somebody took you to a different realm, maybe you wouldn't exactly want to be there. And that's sort of the situation. This pattern, as he says, is what we are. Okay, so the other point that I want to make, or the other thing I want to address or direct your attention to, is the discussion. There's an interesting discussion on page 139 about how this connects up to meditation, but we don't really have time to look at that. Basically, I want to look at pages 143 and 4, and that takes us back a little bit also to meditation, or to his discussion of meditation, on 143, let's see. Okay, at the very top of page 143, he suggests that it's possible to do something. He says, we, and note that it's in quotes, we can learn to allow brief knowings which track more of time and which are broad and impartial enough to take into account both our self-observed objects and other background items as all being given with time. It therefore becomes possible for such a knowing to tap the dynamism of time. So one thing to notice about that is that it's like this idea of a view from nowhere. Instead of setting up a position within what time presents and saying, this is my view, this is my self, and here's what I observe, instead of that, we can take the view from nowhere, or what I usually prefer to call the view from everywhere, and that's partly what he's describing here. He still doesn't say here at this on this page what that means, or well, no, he says kind of what it means, but what to do. Right? But he does on the next page give a suggestion. It's not presented in any way as a formal exercise, but I really think it's something that you can work with and investigate. So on page 144, about seven lines down, he talks about our ordinary knowing and how it's characterized by the fact that the present moment is linked to its past and is linked to the fact that it's going to give way to the future. And that linkage weakens the present moment or deadens it. He says the net effect is deadening as far as appreciation of the present is concerned. And that's basically the clue that he's giving here. He's saying we could learn to appreciate the present differently. And he's described that in the previous page as seeing the objects that appear in time as symbols. So you might ask, well, symbols of what? We could say symbols of time, we could say symbols of themselves. The point is, they're not just object, and they're not caught up by looking back to the past out of which they arose and the future to which they're going to give way. So we want to get away from that deadening sense. We want to work with what we experience as though it had a kind of symbolic reality, instead of reducing everything to, as he says here, rigid, prosaic items and meanings. And then he gives what seems to me to be a practice and something you could work with during this coming week or forever. He says in the first full paragraph, instead of nailing each point down within this familiar past, present, future picture, we can concentrate on attending to what is immediately present without locating it in a before-after causal nexus. And then he says, that sounds like meditation. In other words, you know, a phrase that Rinpoche sometimes points to and points to its limitations is the phrase, be here now. So you could say, well, isn't he saying that? Isn't he saying we can concentrate on what's immediately present without locating it in a causal nexus? And he says, yeah, it's similar to that, but the problem with a phrase like be here now and what he has actually said about that is that's fine, except nobody understands be and nobody understands here and nobody understands now. Instead of trying to make that happen, just in and of itself, you need to be more precise about how to let go of the past and the future. And basically what he suggests here is that we don't have to fixate on things. Right? We don't have to fixate on things. We don't have to fixate on meanings. We don't have to fixate on views, and certainly not on thoughts. So some of that will be familiar to people with a meditative background, but he's really suggesting that if we're more clear on how the dynamic of time operates, that will give us a lot more precision and really, I think, make it a lot easier to let go of some of those connections. So another way he says that is right at the bottom of that page. He says we can see things as presentations, in other words, not as things, with ourselves as part of each presentation. So again, that's the view from everywhere or the vision of the whole. So I think that would be a good thing to practice during the coming week, because it's a way to get into the dynamic. That's what he's suggesting. You could look again at those two pages that I mentioned from Dynamics on pages 99 to 100. He's reflecting there on very similar themes. And it might give you a little more insight into how to actually practice with this. So maybe next time we can talk some about that practice. And also, you know, more about how it's been going with exercise 16, the space-time knowledge on the conventional level. So that's the direction, and we'll go on with the rest of this chapter, which continues now with the second level or second stage time, and then goes into third stage. So we just go into more depth, more richness of the alternatives, the other possibilities for time.